And good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Good morning to everybody listening on WILL AM and also watching on our website. It's will.illinois.edu. We are webcasting the program today. Glad to have you with us either way. The producer for the program, Harriet Williamson, and Kyle Mabry is at the controls. I guess I should put my headphones on. Glad to have everybody with us. We are here talking about water this morning on the program. And in fact, this is something that we have now done spent a couple of hours on yesterday, and we'll be talking some more about tomorrow. And in this sense, it's so easy to take our water supply for granted, because in your home, you go there, you turn on the tap, the water comes out, and it seems to be an almost endless supply of clean, pure water. And we have very good water here in our part of the state. It is, however, a finite resource, so it's certainly worth thinking about where the water comes from. And then there are another set of questions that we've talked about a little bit, and that is where it goes when it goes down the drain. We'll be talking about that some more tomorrow. But in this part of the program, what we thought we would try to do is just go to the source and talk a little bit about, for people here in Champaign-Urbana or in central Illinois, where the water comes from. It is a resource that we need to take care of, and that's kind of the theme for this part of the show. And we're really pleased to have here on the program with us two guests, and they both work at the Illinois State Water Survey, which is based on the campus of the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. Vern Knapp, he is a hydrologist, senior hydrologist, with the Center for Watershed Science. Right? Okay. And also George Roadcap, he is a hydrogeologist at the Center for Groundwater Science, at the Water Survey. And both of them have been involved in a number of studies looking at the water supply, where the water comes from, the water that everybody depends on, various places around the state. And there, a lot of this information is available on the website of the Water Survey. One report I imagine we'll refer to is one that's very specific to the Mahomet Aquifer. People can read that on the website. And we're open for questions. Whatever questions you might have about the water that we use here in Champaign-Urbana, where it comes from, and concerns about how we manage that resource in a sustainable way. That's really what we're going to be talking about here in this part of the show. So questions are welcome here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. And you want to send us an email, well, you can do that too. And the address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, thank you both very much.
Glad to be here.
I'm really pleased that you could be here. This is something that we have talked about from time to time. Probably not in a couple of years. There was a period where I was trying to have some fairly regular conversations with your former chief, Derek Wynn Stanley, about just to get people thinking about that, again, that question, that when you go and you turn on the tap at your house, where does that water come from? Let's just ask right that basic question. In central Illinois, when you turn on the tap, where does that water come from?
Depends where you live. So each community uses their own separate supply.
Okay.
And that really is one thing as compared to, power or natural gas or all of those other resources. Water is a very local issue. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I suppose that's a good point to make, that there are people who depend on groundwater. In Champaign-Urbana, it's groundwater. Mm-hmm. There are also places where people depend on surface water. Springfield, they have a big lake there, or a big reservoir. Up in the northern part of the state, people get their water from Lake Michigan. So, indeed, it really depends. If you look at the breakdown between groundwater and surface water, say, for Illinois people, how does that break down?
Well, a big part of the equation is Lake Michigan, because it's not only Chicago. A lot of the outlying communities in the Chicago area get their water from Lake Michigan, and that's where the biggest population is in the state. So, yeah. So I don't remember the exact percentage, but 60 to 65, maybe even 70% of the water in Illinois comes from Lake Michigan.
Yeah.
So, but once you get outside of that region, it's in the northern part of the state, it's mostly groundwater, and in the southern part of the state, it's mostly surface water.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about this thing that I've mentioned now a couple of times, the Mahomet Aquifer, where for a lot of people in the central part of the state, that's where the water comes from. What is it? What is the Mahomet Aquifer?
It's essentially a buried valley. It's an old old Ohio River that's been filled in with sand over time, up to 150 feet thick, and now that sand is full of water. So it sits just to the north of Champaign-Urbana and snakes its way over towards the Illinois River, about 180 miles long, covers about 4,000 square miles. So it's quite substantial. It doesn't underlie Springfield or Decatur, which is why they have reservoirs, mm-hmm. and which is why Bloomington has a reservoir. But in Champaign, that's the only source of water we have because, believe it or not, we live at the top of a hill. And
you're kidding me.
Yeah. So, you know, water on in western Champaign flows to the south and towards the Illinois River through the Kaskaskia and the Sangamon, and water in Urbana and it flows to the east towards the Wabash River. So there really isn't a good reservoir site per se, but we have the Mahomet Aquifer, which has allowed the town to develop. So so we get our water from wells that are 200, 300 feet deep on the west side of town. And they supply not only Champaign-Urbana, but other communities like Tolono and Pisodum and St. Joe that may have had a groundwater system in the past, but it proved to be inadequate. So, or for other economic reasons have gone on to the Champaign-Urbana supply. So, we're the big user in the aquifer, and by far, except for agricultural use over by the Illinois River, where there's a lot of irrigation.
Yeah. How many people, can you say, how many people depend on the Mahomet Aquifer as their water source?
Well, I think the figure we use is, well, including some of their surface water reservoirs, around 750,000 people.
So that's it's a significant number of people, and not in just in Champaign-Urbana, but in a lot of towns as well. And in addition to individuals and households, there is industrial use, there's agricultural use. So we're talking about a lot of people who are drawing on this resource, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And this is old water?
Well, it is and it isn't. You know, or the Illinois State Geological Survey is trying to figure that out. And most of it that water that filled up the aquifer filled up when the last glaciation left. It flushed through water that's about 9 or 10,000 years old. And since then, in areas where recharge is occurring, where water's entering the aquifer, there's younger water coming in. So you can look at the ages of the water to help you determine where and how much water is entering the aquifer. Mm-hmm. So the youngest or those recharge areas for Champaign-Urbana, we've determined are in two main areas. One is along the Sangamon River and the Allerton Park area. There's a connection between the aquifer and the stream. And the other area that we're just beginning to understand and learn about is actually in the city of Rantoul, and to the east of Rantoul and to the northwest of Rantoul, there's a sand body at the surface that is allowing recharge to come in the aquifer and find its way down to the Mahomet.
Yeah. I know that certainly in recent years, there has been a very serious scientific effort, and you guys at the survey have been involved in this, to really get an understanding of the resource, what it is, how much water is there, how much we're using today, how much we think we'll be using in the decades ahead. And a number of reports have been issued. So again, if people are interested in reading on that subject, they can go to the survey. Now that this has been going on for 5 years or so, how well do we really have a handle on these very basic questions, like how much water is there, and how how quickly are we using it, and how quickly is it being recharged?
Well, the more we've studied it, the more we've realized that there's actually more water there that's available to use. With a buried aquifer like the Mahomet, it's always a question of, well, how fast does water get back into it? And the more we've studied it, the more we've realized that there is sources of recharge and water's coming in faster than we expected. So, there's a lot of water that's stored in the aquifer, but the question is always, well, what's the balance? How much is coming in versus how much is leaving? And what sort of impact will our use have on private wells, on base flow, and things like that? But one of the things we've seen is that most of the recharge to the aquifer is occurring during high river flows, where you have higher gradients and you have small streams that are more, that have flow in them. And so our impact to the ecological resources in the area has been much less than we expected initially. So, we still have impacts on private well owners and things like that with groundwater development. So our studies, we've put in a lot of observation wells and a lot of drilling and stuff, and a lot of work by the Illinois State Geological Survey to figure out, well, what is the geology, and then we measure water levels to see what's going on. And then we put all that into computer models, which the easiest way to describe it is like a million square Sudoku, that we're trying to, figure out the groundwater flow equation in each of those cells.
Well, I guess the bottom line question for a lot of people is, given also the fact that we know that there has been growth in this part of the state, and we're expecting that there likely will be continued growth, and that means continued demand on the resource. So is there reason for us to be concerned about the rate of drawdown and whether we're pulling water out faster than it's being replaced?
Well, from the groundwater side, there is some concern, but there's also, as we move forward, people will adapt and the engineers will figure out, more clever ways of getting water out with less impact. So, one of the things Illinois American did recently is their new wells, they moved the new wells in their center of pumpage much farther to the west, out towards the center of the aquifer. So that has the effect of drawing the water down less than if they pump closer to the edge of the aquifer in town. So there are things we can do to help mitigate, our impact.
I don't know. Is there anything you want to add to that?
I'm the surface water hydrologist.
Oh, you're the surface water.
If we're talking about the Mahomet Aquifer, the issues are different. But if you look at some of the major cities that use surface water reservoirs, Decatur, Springfield, Bloomington, all of those systems have a very well-defined finite resource, which is their reservoir and the inflow into the reservoir, especially during drought periods. And we have listed all of those reservoirs either as at risk or inadequate if a very severe drought were to occur.
Yeah. So I guess people would not be surprised that something like that, the way it gets recharged is when it rains. And if it doesn't rain, you've got a problem.
That's right.
All right. We have a couple of callers here. In fact, we have several. Let me take a moment to introduce again the guests. Sitting here next to me, Vernon Knapp is a senior hydrologist with the Center for Watershed Science at the Illinois State Water Survey, based on the U of I campus. Also here with us is George Rodecap. He's a hydrogeologist with the Center for Groundwater Science, the State Water Survey. And we're talking here about water. Ultimately, we're talking about the source. Where does water come from? That water that we depend on, that water when you turn on the tap in your house and it comes out, the question is, well, where does that water come from? And how do we manage that resource in a sustainable way? Questions welcome. You're listening on WILL AM. You're watching on will.illinois.edu. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455, and email. And that is will-talk@illinois.edu. And let's talk with some folks here, starting with somebody who is in Piatone on our toll free line. Line four, right here. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. Lovely day. This is a good subject, good topic. I love it because I firmly believe we're going to end up paying more for water in the future than gas because it's we're running out of it in spots. Having grown up in the Southwest, I can tell you that they're definitely hurting. And I think a lot of it is man-made because we keep building houses and infrastructure, and we don't conserve on some of the rain when they do get it. They're drying up. The Colorado River, for instance, is a good example. It's half of what it used to be at this time of year, give or take, depending on how what kind of snowpack they get in the mountains and the rain. But, in fact, here locally, I've noticed a drop in a lot of our aquifers. We have been getting a lot of the storms and a lot of the snowpack and things which we need this winter. It's very dry, and come this spring, if we don't get a lot of rain, I fear for the utilities are going to hike up a little bit. But my question, not only that as a comment, but my question is, people like to put chemicals on their lawns. Now, I know a lot of these aquifers get this groundwater. It kind of percolates. Having a little bit of background in geology myself, I kind of laugh at everybody wants to fertilize and try to get the grubex out and all that. I always wonder what happens to all that water. Once it rains, soaks into the ground. Does it take that? Do the aquifers, the percolation process, filtrate those particles out, or are they end up going through the water system and then therefore goes into whatever water system you guys have? And I'm just curious about that and other things and how you guys feel about water in general. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, thanks. I think that that's it's a really good question. If you're in Champaign Urbana and you put something on your yard, does that eventually end up in the aquifer?
Probably not. Most of that would end up going through the soil zone and into drains and storm drains and go out the copper slough or the boneyard. If you're applying chemicals in a more sandy area, like stretches of the Sangamon along the Mohammed or up near Rantoul, where we know there's recharge going on, then things could have much greater potential to get in. So In Champaign-Urbana, things like nitrate would get into the soil, and once you lose the oxygen, then the bacteria will start using up the nitrate. So it probably won't get very far. But in other areas, private wells that are out in rural areas that are really shallow, there's ag chemicals and nitrates can get into those, and not only in the clay areas, but also in the sandy areas we see problems with chemicals in the wells.
Mm. So again, it gets back to this question. It sort of depends on where you are. What about for surface water?
Well, as George said, most of what gets applied, most of whatever falls is rainfall, and a lot of these chemicals are soluble. They end up just going laterally toward the streams. Mm-hmm. So whether it's through storm drains, if you're in a community, or if you're out in a rural area, if it's tile drains or just natural drainage toward the stream, that's where it gets. So Illinois streams definitely have high amounts of nitrates and phosphorus, which are ordinarily things that are included in most types of lawn applications, as well as chemicals that are added agriculturally in order to improve crop yield.
Mm. Well, is it too sweeping a statement to say that eventually everything ends up draining one way or another, to where it drains to? And for here, for example, so much everything ultimately ends up in Mississippi. So indeed, it may things go down and maybe they get broken down and maybe they don't go far from where they are. But in some sort of a larger sense, really, you have to be thinking about the fact that everything. A lot of things really end up, going the direction things go, and that they do end up in Mississippi.
That's right.
Yeah, one thing that makes Champaign-Urbana unique is since we're at the top of the hill, our water out of the Mohammed is largely recharged through the Sangamon River Basin, but we discharge our treated wastewater into the Salt Fork that flows to the Vermilion River to the east and to the Kaskaskia that flows to the south. So we're kind of unique in that we're not putting our wastewater back into the same watershed that we get our source water out of.
But we're putting it into somebody's watershed.
So somebody else's problem.
Okay, yeah. All right. Let's go to Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hi, Vern and George. It's Dwayne.
Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, Dwayne.
And I've really been interested over a number of years in the growth and development of this, of your modeling programs. And I have a question in regard to that. Is your modeling capable presently or in the future of producing a water use budget that includes the general non-human environmental use, the use that would be required to maintain, think of ordinary or a good level of stream flow. Let me explain. If we compare, you know, water use, the water resource with a household budget, we realize that households have customary immediate expenses like costs of cars, mortgage, and so on, but they are also paying costs of supportive infrastructure like police, fire, governmental sorts of things. And to leave those supportive infrastructure services out of the budget would be a mistake. And my feeling is presently, given and I'm not faulting the water survey or present science so much as it's been a habit, basically, of water, thinking about water in the economy is to think about major users, human users, agriculture, power generation, and that kind of thing. Get where I'm going to?
Yeah, speaking for the groundwater models, you know, we try to model the main aquifers and everything up to the surface, but we don't do the surface very well because there's a lot of processes that go on at the surface that don't factor into the regional groundwater. So you're kind of in that area between groundwater and surface water if you want to look at, well, how much water is vegetation using along a stream, or how do we maintain base flow for aquatic uses and things like that. So you're asking a lot, to get that, and hopefully we'll get there someday.
Well, I think you've really got a versatile kind of model because, like a lot of models, you're talking about small areas. You're taking it on a bit at a time, and I think these environmental factors are vital. And I don't think you disagree, but when we consider the situation of Champaign County, where we are dependent and will be into any future that we can see for humanity here, on that aquifer, which we're presently, it looks like we're still pulling more out of storage than is being replaced. Well, I'll leave that with you. Thanks.
Okay. I don't know if you want to add anything on to that?
Well, in regards to, I mean, this refers to both groundwater and surface water models. You know, a lot of what we do is very specific to certain localities. Mm-hmm. There are some larger scale models that can address issues, such as the Illinois River or the Mississippi River, but oftentimes the two aren't all that well connected. Yeah. You know, so that the issues that we're seeing locally don't necessarily get incorporated into some of these large-scale models. So I think that's what Dwayne was referring to. So we don't really yet have these grand holistic models of the entire system, which, you know, hopefully someday, you know, that's something we're trying to work toward, but still have a ways to go.
Okay. Well, let's talk again with another caller. We'll move on, and this is somebody in Champaign County and on our line number two. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Whether it goes to the west or the east, it still ends up in the Mississippi in the dead zone at the base. I think atrazine is like the unspoken word around here a lot of times. It's banned in Europe, but I wasn't really planning on asking about that. I was going to ask about, do you have a baseline for, you know, I don't think there's any way you can have a baseline for the recharge system that existed before development, quote-unquote, happened here. Channelization, elimination of wetlands would clearly affect the rate, and even in town here, they're talking about sequestration as opposed to just getting it down the river as fast as we can. So does your model, I don't think you can have a baseline except an estimate of what it was like. I don't know how important that is, but so I guess I think you can elaborate on that if you would.
Yeah, can you?
Yeah, it's, knowing what, or trying to simulate what went on before development is very important to figure out how things changed and how, how we look at how recharge comes in and how it balances the pumpage from the city well. So that's a complicated equation, and one of the things you have to solve is, you know, what may have occurred pre-development. One of the things to consider about Champaign-Urbana, though, is we're covered in clay. There's thick clay layers over most of the area. So a lot of things that go on at the surface don't have a large impact on what goes on in the Mahomet Aquifer, for example, because, you know, water, the limiting factor of water getting in is the low permeability of that clay. So, you know, you can dig all the ditches and drainages you want, but it doesn't affect the Mahomet Aquifer unless you're in one of the key areas where the soil is sandy, and then there a lot of more recharge can come in. So, you know, what we may have done in the Rantoul area or along the Sangamon or out by Mahomet would have a larger impact than in other areas.
And I would say from a surface standpoint, you know, we have data on stream flows that goes back almost 100 years. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the drainage improvements, the tile drains and channelization of streams preceded that. We're going back to the late 1800s. And we've tried to make efforts to kind of recreate what might have happened, but really we don't know from a quantity standpoint what the difference range of flows in the streams. We have beliefs and concepts about what we think it would have been, but the data really isn't there. The only data that goes back that far is for, like, the Mississippi River, and that doesn't show us, you know, all these things that we think are happening. Yeah. The data on the Mississippi doesn't really give us any input. It doesn't look like much has changed for those large rivers. And regarding some of the quality standpoints, the data that we have is even goes back even less in time. So, can't really address pre-development conditions.
We'll talk some more in just a little bit. We have some other callers. We'll talk more with our guests, Vern Knapp and George Roadkamp from the State Water Survey. First, though, we need to take a very short break, and then we'll be back. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, why the primary process is so confusing with different voting systems in different states. A look at the American primary process on the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's music heritage at the University of Illinois. Now featuring new exhibits entitled A Century of Stories and Sounds from the Stage, Music, Dance, and Theater in America. More information is at sousaarchives.org.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us on WILL AM. And if you're watching on our website, that's will.illinois.edu. We're webcasting the program this morning. Tomorrow morning on the program, we'll be doing our monthly show on personal finance. We do that every month. And our guest will be David Sinnoh. He's clinical professor of finance in the College of Business at the U of I. So this is a chance for you to call in and ask questions about investing and money management. On the second hour tomorrow, this is another program that's part of this mini-series we're doing here about water. And some of the shows we've tried to talk about where the water that we use comes from. There's another part of this. It has to go someplace. What goes down the drain? What happens to it? Well, we'll try to talk a little bit more about that tomorrow in the second hour. And our guest will be Daniel Schneider. He's professor of urban and regional planning at the Illinois Natural History Survey. It's another one of the scientific surveys that's based on the campus of the University of Illinois, like the Water Survey is. And we'll talk about some of the ideas you'll find in his book, Hybrid Nature, Sewage Treatment, and the Contradictions of the Industrial Ecosystem. So we'll talk a little bit more about that stuff that goes down the drain and what happens to it. That's tomorrow. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, 10 different topics every week. You can find the schedule on our website, which is WILL.illinois.edu. Follow us on Twitter at Will Public Media. You can also find us on Facebook. This morning in this hour of the show, we're happy to have two guests here. They're both from the Illinois State Water Survey, based on the campus of the University of Illinois. Vern Knapp is a hydrologist, and George Rodecap is a hydrogeologist. And we're, again, trying to, you know, raise your basic consciousness about the water that we use, all of us, that, as I keep saying, it's that, you know, you go, you turn on the tap. Where does that water come from? It is a finite resource, and it's worth thinking about where that water comes from and how we use it. So questions are certainly welcome. And one of our guests is more of a groundwater guy, and the other is more of a surface water guy. We're covering all the water as much as we possibly can. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, will-talk@illinois.edu. That is the email. We'll go back to the phones here. Some people have been waiting patiently. We'll go out to Philadelphia. No, the Philadelphia caller left us. Must have been somebody online. He got tired of waiting. Let's go to Effingham. How about that? Line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. Basic three questions. Good black soil in this part of Illinois, the a proposed landfill on the top of the Muhammad Aquifer, and the barnacles that, from what I've read, is in water everywhere. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I expect that the first question is referring to this proposal to locate a hazardous waste landfill that would accept PCBs and that would locate that in Clinton. And the concern is, is there some possibility that material would end up leaching out of that landfill and getting into the Muhammad Aquifer and then ultimately into the water supply? Is this something that the survey has looked at?
Well, the survey has looked at it. They've been asked to look at it by several different community groups and respond to, you know, what is in the permit. And so we've made some comments on that, but you know, it's a question of time. I mean, you can never say never that something will completely, you know, hold water for here to infinity, you know. And so there, you know, it's a 1600 acre basically, or 800 acre, I forget how big it is, 160, I guess, sorry. Of which 22 acres is going to be for PCB remediated sediment from around the Great Lakes and possibly from around the country. So, and it's going in a hole that's 70 feet deep. And so, you know, this hole in the ground does pass through several of the upper aquifers, the shallow sands, which, you know, if it did leak, could get into those upper sands and ultimately get into the Salt Fork, which the landfill is right next to the Salt Fork, or make their way down to the Muhammad Aquifer. Because, you know, ultimately all the water that's in the Muhammad Aquifer comes down from the surface through these shallower sands and stuff. So, So, you know, it's just like a landfill anywhere. Eventually, you know, you got to expect there to be failures here or there, but they, you know, they may be small or they may be large, who knows. But so ideally it'd be nice not to have it over the Mahomet Aquifer, which, you know, is essentially the sole source of water for, you know, a lot of the central Illinois. Mm-hmm. You know, Champaign doesn't really have an alternative. Although, you know, the landfill is largely down gradient of Champaign, but that could change with water use and development of the aquifer over time. So, so there's, you know, legitimate concern.
The other issue is really a different, this is, I suppose, it's a water quality issue. And I suppose it also has much to do with the way that effluent gets treated. This is more of a down the drain kind of question, I guess, because people have started to raise more and more concerns about the fact that all of the stuff that we take that ends up running through us is in the waste water that we flush away, that is treated before it ends up being released back into the environment. But the ultimate question then is that treatment sufficient? And are we still finding traces of a wide variety of things that we all take in the water that ends up going back into the environment? And then what are the larger implications of that?
Well, neither one of us are water quality people, you know, but
I know you guys say we have to survey have people who are water yeah. quality people, but I know that's really not your main focus.
Certainly there are things that we add to the water that are not treated. Or that we, you know, at least right now with the technology that we can't treat. I think it's always a continuing process. You know, water treatment is continuing to get better as we recognize, you know, what some of the things are that need to be addressed. It may always be the case where, you know, we're always finding out something that we're trying to improve upon.
Yeah, and it's a very complicated question. There are some famous examples like out in Boulder, Colorado, where downstream of the wastewater treatment, the gender of the fish all changed to males or females. I can't remember which one. You know, it's been hypothesized that it's due to hormones and stuff that humans are processing. But then you come to the Midwest and you go to there's a study in Minnesota that we're looking at, well, what happens is the Mississippi River passes Minneapolis-St. Paul. And it was a lot less clear. There wasn't the cause and effect that was seen in Boulder, and some of the non-developed, more pristine streams that had no wastewater on them also had high levels of these hormones and other compounds. And so is it due to the native wildlife? You know, I don't know. So it gets very complicated, but it's kind of a big issue that a lot of research is on.
Yeah. I have another caller here, and there's something that I guess an email here that I want you to respond to just for a second, and then I want to go on to this caller, because I'm sure it's the question that people are going to keep coming back to, and I think we talked a little bit about it before, but I want to make sure that we get in the point again, and it's a question from somebody who wants to know about the level of water in the aquifer. And whether, in fact, are we drawing it down faster than it's being recharged? And do we have to worry about, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years down the line?
Well, yes and no. There's some interesting things going on. The biggest point of drawdown is in Champaign-Urbana. And so it'll continue, but water levels are staying above the Mahomet Aquifer itself. So the Mahomet Aquifer is under pressure. But there are some shallow sands that have started to desaturate a little bit. And so we see a signature in the water levels that the annual fluctuation has gone down because water is being added and stored to these shallow sands. In fact, right under the studio here is one of those shallow sands. So it dampens out the water level fluctuation and also slows down the drawdown over time. You know, on the other hand, you know, then there isn't water in that aquifer to be used. But the principal impact area in Champaign-Urbana of those shallow sands is all within the Illinois American service area. So we're not really directly impacting anybody that's drinking the water. So, it's not a straightforward, but the Mohammed Aquifer itself will stay full and under pressure for a long time to come, but there might be impacts to the shallow systems. And, you know, thus, a lot of that impact is going to be within Champaign-Urbana itself, but it may be out also in the rural areas.
Yeah. And just real quick, again, for people who were not listening earlier in the program, though, there is some concern for those cities, and there are some cities in the central part of the state that really rely on surface water. They're not on the aquifer. And so we're talking about Decatur, Springfield.
And Bloomington.
And Bloomington, that do rely on surface water, that they have reservoirs, and those get recharged by rain. So there really is an issue, and maybe that's not, you know, I don't know if that has to do as much with excessive withdrawal as it has to do with the fact that we've had some really dry years and that's just not, they're not being topped up.
Well, our concern is during very severe drought conditions. So, and if we look at historically, we're maybe looking at three droughts that might have occurred in the last 120 years that are, you know, of the severity necessary to truly impact some of these systems. So a lot of us are familiar with, you know, perhaps the 1988 drought, which is the most severe since then. But in terms of those three communities, only Bloomington was really hit hard by that drought. Some of the worst droughts that we're looking at are those that occurred back in the 1950s or the 1930s. If those types of drought conditions, similar to what happened in the 1930s and 1950s, happened, yes, we are looking at very low reservoir storage that might occur during that. In some cases, you know, some systems being very close to being empty, some of the reservoirs. During normal years, that's not really a concern of ours. Even during some of these moderate droughts, if you go back to the 1988 drought, or there was a drought period in 1999 to 2000, you know, some of these lakes may have fallen 5 feet or 6 feet, and there starts to be a concern. But we're talking about, you know, concerns during the really bad drought. Following those severe droughts, there has never been a concern about refill. So normal conditions in Illinois, you get anywhere close to normal conditions, reservoirs are overflowing normally.
Okay. Let us talk with somebody else here. Been patient in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
Yes.
This is very interesting. I had a question about a little bit further east here. There is formations apparently in the ground where artesian water is available. There's a little town called Potomac, the artesian city. And I was wondering about, is artesian water considered to be surface water and thereby it would have more old agricultural chemicals in it as it comes up?
No, not necessarily. The wells in Potomac are, they're over 100 feet deep. I don't know how exactly deep they are, but the Mohammed Aquifer and the overlying aquifers are in enough pressure that the water actually flows up over the land surface if you put a well in it. So, and farther up in Iroquois County, there's a township called Artesia Township where there's a lot of flowing wells. And so there's a really heavy clay at the surface that keeps the pressure up, and then when you drill a well into it, the water level in that well rises to 3 or 4 feet above the land surface or more. So, no, it's deeper water. I wouldn't consider it surface water at all. If it comes out of the spring, you know, then it starts mixing and behaving more like surface water.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just familiar with a couple of wells I don't even know if they're wells. There's a pipe that's driven into the side of the hill, and water has been flowing out of it for 100 years or so. And then on my property, too, there's a little seep. So I figured if I put a pipe down in that, maybe that would be an artesian flow also. But that you're saying it comes from a deeper place.
Well, if there's a deep well that's drilled, but before you were to drink any of it, I would get it tested and tested for bacteria and nitrate and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure that these were drilled wells. These are just pipes that are in the ground, and the water just seems to come out, and I don't know. Anyway, thank you.
All right, thanks. So just to be clear on this, I guess I never really thought much about this. And an artesian well is one where there is natural pressure that forces the water out. So it's not, you don't have to pump the water out. It just
Well, it's technically a flowing artesian well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We're coming down to the point where we have maybe 5-6 minutes left. There's something that I do want to at least mention, and it gets at the issue of managing the resource. And I was talking with a colleague and about the fact I was going to have this conversation, and she said something like, well, who owns the Mahomet Aquifer? And I said, well, that's an interesting question, because on one level, everybody does, and on the other level, nobody does. And that makes this whole business of management really complicated. You know, because there are a lot of people who can make claims on it, and a lot of people who do make claims on it. But it's something that everybody has to get together and decide, you know, get all your stakeholders together. You have to get everybody together around a table and decide how is the resource going to be managed in a sustainable way.
Yeah, Illinois doesn't have a lot of groundwater law per se. Nobody owns the water. So, you know, as long as you own property over the aquifer, you're free to use. I mean, there are some reasonable use clauses, but they're not really enforced. So nobody owns it. If you own property over it, you can use as much as you want.
So if I bought a property that was over the Mahomet Aquifer, I could put in a well and I could open up a Dave's Bottled Water Company and I could pump the water out, put it in bottles, and then go out and sell it. And there would be no one... Depending on how much water I guess I was withdrawing, nobody could come along and say that I couldn't.
Right. One example in Champaign-Urbana might be on the west side of town. There's four large capacity wells that pump water in the Kaskaskia Ditch or Kaskaskia River and send it down to the chemical plants in Tuscola. So all they own is a little patch of ground around the wells, or lease it and just dump the water in the ditch and then pick it up and use it again down in Tuscola. So, I mean, they don't have to ask permission for anybody to do that.
So I mentioned, or maybe I didn't mention, that at least a few years back, the then governor, Blagojevich, said Illinois really should have a water management plan. And one of the things that happened was that the survey was tasked with starting to do some study of water supplies and what the demand was, particularly concentrating on two areas, the northeastern part of the state and here in central part of the state. And as part of all of this, I think there was a greater effort to get together people who had an interest. So people who represent government, people who represent agriculture, you know, to try to get everybody who's interested in the resource together to talk about how to manage that resource. Is that something that you can talk about, and where exactly that stands?
As far as the process, I do want to point out is that we recognized at that time that water supply planning needed to be done on a regional basis rather than state down. That there's some recognition that the top-down approach didn't really work to a great degree, because a lot of the issues that were facing the regions and communities individually were very local in nature. So the issues that are affecting northeastern Illinois are not nearly the same that are facing east central Illinois. So since then, there is actually a third region that studies have been started on, which is the Kaskaskia River region, where the issues are much more centered on the two big federal reservoirs down there and how water will be used there. But, the common thing with all these three regions is that there is a planning committee created that's made up of stakeholders. So I think there's a recognition on the statewide scale is that in order for any of these types of plans to grab hold, you had to have people locally and communities and other entities agree on, yes, this is the problems, these are the types, this is how we think is the best way to approach those problems.
And that's, I do want to mention that we do have this thing called the East Central Illinois Regional Water Supply Planning Committee. And then there is the Mahomet Aquifer Consortium that even predates that, which was, I think, organized in the late 90s, just because there are people who said, look, we need to be talking about this resource and how it's used, and let's get everybody together that wants to get together. And they both have websites, so people are interested in what happens on this issue. They can look at that. They can go to the Water Survey website and read. They can spend a lot of time reading the reports that you all have done there, trying to get a handle on what the resource is. So there certainly are plenty of opportunities for people to be involved in this issue if they want to be.
Yes, and we're having another stakeholder conference March 29th at the Holiday Inn in Urbana, and there's information on those websites, the Mahomet Aquifer Consortium website, so they can get involved and be a part of it.
Okay, so again, when is this?
March 29th at the Holiday Inn in Urbana.
Okay, and that is something that is absolutely open to the public and anybody who is interested in being in attending, if they have concerns, they should feel welcome?
Yeah, there's a $30 charge, but it includes lunch. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, I guess, you know, part of our interest in having the conversation was just to get people thinking about these sorts of things. And I think it's good for people to know that there is an avenue for them to participate if they want to. Do you think that it at least one can say that awareness of water is and where the water comes from is maybe a little better than what it was, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago?
I think that's the case. I think there could be circumstances that would greatly increase that. You know, if we had, from a surface side, if there was a drought, if from the groundwater side, if there was a situation
suddenly
where
you turned
the aquifer
on the tap
is drying
and
down,
there was no water.
So any of those conditions would, I'm sure, greatly heighten awareness. But I think in general it is increasing.
Okay. So is there some sort of thought that you would like to leave with folks?
Well, yeah, the Mahomet Aquifer Consortium is also trying to push education and even getting into the schools and getting a curriculum developed at the schools on water. And so, you know, to teach the kids more about where our water comes from, where it's going, and the Champaign Schools is doing that. And, you know, so when they get to be adults, they understand, you know, these stormwater drainage issues are maybe a little bit better, or the aquifer issues a little bit better. Yeah. So it's a long process.
Okay. Well, there we will leave it at that, with our thanks to our guests, George Rodekamp. He's a hydrogeologist with the Center for Groundwater Science at the Water Survey. And Vern Knapp is a hydrologist with the Center for Watershed Science. And again, they both work at the Illinois State Water Survey, based on the campus of the University of Illinois. All kinds of information there about a variety of issues that have to do with water. So go to their website and take a look at it and see what's there. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.